ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, October 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15, hour and 20 or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me to kick off a new week here on the program. First guest today, Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview. Second guest on today's show, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com with our Week 10 college football first look. Final month of the college football regular season is effectively here. Now, we do have some teams that play on that first Saturday in December. Then, of course, the Army-Navy game that stands alone there that second Saturday of December. But for all intents and purposes here, with the big conferences wrapping up their regular seasons, going into conference championship games, then, of course, on into bowl season, mostly the last regular season month here for college football. Before we get into all that stuff here, few things about what's going on over at bangthebook.com. My new set of college football power ratings has been posted over there, along with a college football opening line report. Tons of activity here already in the betting market with what is a huge week. Lots of prominent games, marquee games, but also some moves, of course, on those group of five matchups. But those are up over at bangthebook.com. My NHL and NBA situational articles up over there as well. I've started doing some game previews for college football this week. I'll have a Thursday night NFL preview coming up here shortly. Lots of stuff going on over there. All the NBA, all the NHL games previewed for this evening. Parker Michaels' NHL picks as we start up a new week. Just lots of great stuff over there. So please head on over to bangthebook.com. Check all of that out, especially our matchup data section. Lots of good stats and trends over there. So without further ado, we'll bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joseph, how are you today, man?
Doing great. Starting to figure out the NFL a little bit, and then trade deadline coming up, World Series, college football playoff rankings tomorrow. It's that sports nexus to the world, man.
Yeah, a lot of things going on here, to be sure. Just a 1-4 week for me in the Super Contest, so I'm pretty pissed off about that. 1-point loss on New Orleans, half-point loss on the Jets. That was a gamble on my part. I took a bad number in the Super Contest in hopes of being against the consensus who could get 4.5 as opposed to the market 6. Of course, it falls in between at 5, so wind up losing the Jets. Would have won a personal play in the Jets if I had made one. So I guess that's the way it goes here sometimes in the NFL. But one more game to go for Week 8. That's the Monday Night Football game between the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs a 7-point favorite here in this one. We really haven't seen a whole lot of movement on this game throughout the week. We've just seen the juice kind of move around a little bit. Total has dropped a couple points from 44.5 to 42.5 at Bookmaker. Joe, what's the biggest key to tonight's game for you?
Well, it's basically the Broncos are going as far as this defense takes them. I think that's what a lot of people would agree with, and it's basically unfortunate for Denver. Their strengths are those corners, and then their strengths on offense are the wide receivers, but that kind of plays right into where the Chiefs want to go. If I had to bet, you know, your player props or something, Travis Kelce should have a big day. I mean, poor coverage backers like Brandon Marshall and Todd Davis. Todd Davis didn't even practice this week, so even if he plays, you're looking at a limited two inside backers. And the Chiefs, all those pre-snap motions with Tyreek Hill, all the distractions that he can create, all the while, Kelce, I think, will really have a big Kareem Hunt's going to be using that passing game. They'll get creative with him because safety is still a problem for Denver. I've said it on the show before. I'll say it again. T.J. Ward, right before the season, making that move. It stinks in the locker room. It just smells of bad business. And I like Justin Simmons. He's got potential out there, but just all this athleticism aside, he doesn't have that same experience. Darian Stewart, another guy. There's a lot of guys that could be had at safety for Denver, and I would assume Brad showed us he goes Kelce, DeMarcus Robinson. You're going to see a little bit of Albert Wilson, but yeah, I'd say attack the seams, pick on Simmons, run Hunt, use Hill on those end arounds. So the Chiefs, theoretically, if they stay ahead of the chains here and keep those sticks going, things should be well. And really, Von Miller, that's your biggest key, is he needs to show up. He had a bad game last week out, and that's the guy. It's like, get off the milk carton, back on the field. Denver's back is definitely up against the wall, but I mean, big divisional game on their side of the ball. It's just limiting what Trevor Siemian is asked to do, I think, is kind of a key, which is unfortunate because, once again, their strength on O is those two great wide receivers, and that's another key. Like, whether or not Emmanuel Sanders is playing, I can't imagine he's at 100% if he plays at all, and that's that. You take away those explosive nine routes, him killing the seams, him just beating people at will on those quick outs and ins, that take away that from a Mike McCoy offense. You're basically you're leaving that premium matchup of the Demaryius Thomas and Marcus Peters there. That's I think Marcus Peters wins more often than not. Demaryius Thomas is good, but he doesn't win with speed. And yeah, Peters is just going to be on him like white on rice. So Denver will definitely try and establish that running game. You know, C.J. Anderson's a big part of it. The saving grace they have here is I don't think Justin Houston's what he used to be. And Denver does have their tackles back. So I think that makes sense why this total dropped. I'd look for a little bit of a defensive battle, and if Denver wants to win, I think that's their style. They slow this game down, they kill the clock, they run more, and that's the way they survive. But that's a tough sell against this offense. And Andy Reid, the extra rest they've had, the preparation, you know they've had this game circled on the calendar. It's that you have to win in your division to make it to the postseason. So I got to think the Chiefs are going to have some success moving the ball. And, yeah, I just expect a bunch of that big old Kelce, who's just really established himself as one of the best tight ends in the league.
What's really difficult for me here, coming out of what was already a frustrating NFL weekend, is that one of the plays that I cut for my card late was Denver. And I want to find reasons to go against this Kansas City team. 6.5 yards per play on offense is absolutely fantastic, but this defense has given up 6.1 yards per play. So they have had some problems back there stopping the run. They've had issues with 4.7 yards per carry. You know, the corners and the safeties outside of Peters with Eric Berry hurt, they've had some problems in coverage here from time to time. Of course, Kansas City's only turned the football over one time. It was a fumble. They've fumbled nine times. They've only lost one of them. No interceptions from Alex Smith. That's probably not going to continue. I know that they're going to be on the lower end of the spectrum when it comes to turnovers, but still, you'd figure they'd turn the ball over more than once in seven games, of course, with their eighth game coming up tonight. The problem being, Denver has only forced four turnovers here so far this year, so their base defense has played really well. They've held the opposition to 4.5 yards per play, but they're not forcing turnovers. They're not getting those big plays that we would expect from this Denver defense. What happens is they put a pretty bad offense into some compromising positions. So while I think the number is probably a little bit high, especially with the dropping total and with how good this Denver defense is, still, I mean, you look at this situation, Kansas City doesn't turn the football over. So how do the Broncos score? How does Trevor Siemian get short fields? How do they move the football? How do they take advantage of a Chiefs defense that really isn't all that good? So I think for me, I won't have any involvement in this game here tonight, but I think there are some key things you can look at for the future here. Specifically, you know, when will this Kansas City defense actually hurt this team? Was it last week against Oakland? Was it the week before against Pittsburgh? Or are there more spots coming to fade the Chiefs? That's ultimately what my end game is here with tonight's action.
Yeah, what can we take away? And I think you're right that last week's game, that Terrence Mitchell, Gaines, Eric Murray, all those other corners opposite Marcus Peters were the ones getting exploited by Carr and the gang. So I think that's where they go. Basically, the game plan against the Chiefs has to be run away from Chris Jones, that gigantic defensive end. Like, he is just wrecking plays. But outside of that, you could run with no Eric Berry. You've got Sorensen, Frank Zombo, Ron Parker, Derek Johnson. He is just aging right before our eyes. So I would expect, like, they want to pound C.J. Anderson in this game. That's got to be the strategy. And as I mentioned before, they're killing clock. They are going to sap every bit off that play clock before they really get things going. And that's, I think you also really, a great point is, and I touched on it a little bit before, Von Miller, where is he at? I mean, he really needs to show up big in this game, and so does Shane Ray. if the team really misses the departure of a veteran, I don't know if it's just leadership, coaching, or knowing the scheme. DeMarcus Ware and that presence he was creating opposite Miller, they really need someone to run tandem with Miller, and especially when Miller's going to only play a limited amount of snaps, well, you're already forced to maximize his reps and usage. You definitely need somebody else to step up. So, yeah, I'm looking for what Shane Ray could do, and yeah, like you mentioned, just how the Broncos and Mike McCoy, how they're just going to go at this defense, because it's a defense that can be beat. It's not an impossible task here for the Broncos to get within that number.
And another thing, too, I mean, you have to do this in the NFL. You have to try and circle spots, start looking ahead, look for these opportunities where there are games that you want to play. I want to fade the Philadelphia Eagles. I did it in the Super Contest with the 49ers. And look, San Francisco's offense was atrocious in this game. They only had 3.7 yards per play, but they were only outgained 304 to 238, lost this game by 23, despite holding the Eagles to 4.6 yards per play. Next week, Denver plays the Eagles. It's on the road, back-to-back travel, short week off Monday night. So a lot of situational angles going against Denver here, and that's, again, frustrating to me with the early kickoff as well. You know, it's frustrating to me because I want to fade the Eagles. They're only plus 0.3 yards per play so far this year. Obviously, we know what Doug Peterson there in Philadelphia comes from, the Andy Reid coaching tree. A lot of similarities in formations and motion and things of that sort between the Chiefs and the Eagles. So Denver will already be prepared for that type of scheme. But again, things just not particularly lining up here with the schedule. So unless Denver really gets blown out and next week's number opens way too high, it's just another one of those spots where, you know, things set up the way I want them to statistically. Things just don't set up the way I want them to situationally. So, you know, we'll see what Denver looks like here coming out of this game. Obviously, if they get blown out, maybe you look for a bounce back. If they win, you may look for that potential letdown. So, I don't know, but the Broncos are in a very precarious position here because if they lose tonight, they drop to 3-4. If they lose next week against the Eagles, which is a very bad spot, they drop to 3-5. Then the Patriots come to town for Sunday Night Football, and New England seems to have kind of gotten things back on track a little bit here. Obviously, they don't turn the football over, so that'll make things rough on Trevor Siemian. Bengals, then the Raiders on the road. All of a sudden, you start looking at a Denver team that may not have a great shot to win a game until December 3rd, all the way out on the road against Miami.
Yeah, I mean, because Cincinnati may get their act together. Obviously, Oakland's no joke, another divisional battle. And, yeah, you mentioned those three, including Kansas City tonight. That's it just doesn't get any easier, and the schedule makers definitely didn't do them any favors.
Well, and I mean, what do you think about what can Denver do here? I mean, we'll sort of look ahead of the offseason here a little bit, and then we'll get back to Week 8, but – I mean, Denver just hired Vance Joseph. You would think that they give him a fairly long leash here. I mean, what do they do? Do they try to take one of those quarterbacks in the middle of the first round? If things go the way that they're going, this is a team that's going to pick probably in the middle of the first round. Do they go quarterback, try to find that guy? Do they, you know, look around in the free agent market? What do you think that Denver does going forward here? Because we may actually be looking at the end of an era with how good this team has been over the last few years.
Yeah, it'll be tough to keep this defense together. I mean, there's already so much money in corner. You've sunk a ton of money in Von Miller, and it would be refreshing if they spent a first-round pick on a quarterback and just immediately fessed up our mistakes on Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler, the heist. It's just, you know, they've been fortunate on the Osweiler front at least, but they basically, if they could just kind of wipe the slate clean, hit reset, and you know, the Wyoming kid would make a whole lot of sense for their offense that they still want to run. You need someone athletic, and even if you don't like him, I do believe this is a good enough quarterback class where you can kind of pick your flavor of ice cream and what really fits your scheme. But yeah, I would love it as a Broncos fan if they just kind of, like I said, hit the reset button, bring a new quarterback in here, keep Siemian. At least you know you've got the place setter, the footboard holder eventually, but you know you could start if worse comes to worse or an injury. But yeah, I think that's got to be the direction. I mean, especially in an offensive draft. I mean, if you don't do that, take the Penn State kid because we're pretty long in the tooth at running back. But I think it does have to be addressed. And really, you've just got a lot of guys that it's not like we haven't seen them in reps. The only one we haven't seen in Denver is Chad Kelly. And that's just a year or three or five away from happening. So I do believe it's got to be quarterback. They've addressed the O-line. I think Garrett Bowles is a future stud. I love Kyle Whittingham's program, what he does with linemen. So you've addressed the line with Leary in the offseason last year. It's time to, I think, get that quarterback, replace what you got.
All right, well, we touched on the Oakland Raiders, an upcoming opponent here for the Denver Broncos, and they went out on the road against the Buffalo Bills. They were a little bit of a sharp side here in this game. This number came down off of 3 into the 1.5 range at some shops. It was 2.5 at others. But if you look at this game, Buffalo with a 34-14 win, you would think to yourself, okay, well, you know, Buffalo must have severely outplayed the Raiders. Not the case at all. Oakland had 5.8 yards per play in this game, but 4 turnovers. Buffalo didn't turn the football over. They've only turned the football over 3 times so far this season, and that was the name of the game. So the Bills cruised to a 20-point win, even though they gave up 367 yards here. A lot of them through the air to Derek Carr, and of course some of those, you know, while the game was mostly in hand. So what you're looking at here is a Buffalo team now sitting at 5-2. They're 4-0 at home. They're playing very well up there in Western New York. You think that the culture change in Buffalo had a lot to do with this?
I can't stress enough how impressive it's been. I think that's what we tend to lean on this show, or at least if I can take away anything from a game, I love to lean on the coaching. I mean, it emphasizes the leadership. It emphasizes everyone's attitude, what's really bringing everyone together. And not only have they completely changed schemes on defense, but now they've traded away their four of their top draft picks in the last 6 or 7 years. Totally new. Even LeSean McCoy after the game, I think it was something about, it's not about talent, it's not about athleticism or experience, it's about everyone playing with a big heart, with belief. And that, to me, that quote was a shot across the bow to players like Marcell Dareus, Sammy Watkins, Stephon Gilmore, and Ronald Darby. I mean, all these guys were dealt. Now they got some stuff back, acquisitions, trades, draft picks, but I really see them getting rid of, like, all the me guys. They kept the we guys, and now they're playing this new scheme, and it's working. I think, sure, a lot of people might look at some of this game with the Raiders. Hey, it's a bad spot. Turnovers. That the Raiders still moved the ball. Yeah, they did, but this team is all in on defense. They forced those turnovers, I think, legit with solid effort. Leonard Johnson just pelted DeAndre Washington for that first fumble. And then Jalen Richard, I think he got stripped fair and square as well. It's just that's what they're teaching. It's the style of play, and you can't tell me that's not coaching. Some of these defenses are just better at starting that lawnmower up and ripping that ball out when a runner's stalled. You see it. You saw it so many years in Chicago Bears with Lovie Smith's defense, and that wasn't by accident. That is by coaching. That is by tendency, good habits developed, and, yeah, this whole culture change is real. This defense playing out of their minds. I'm not nuts about their offense at all. I think there's, you know, praise to the coaching staff there. As an organization, they grabbed a hold of this steering wheel, turned it around, readjusted this whole franchise. It's just the complete change on defense, the jettison of a ton of salary in those trades. And, you know, I don't want to get too far in the future, but I want to put it back on the table. The Bills have 2 first rounders, 2 second rounders, 2 third rounders, 4th, 5th, and the 6th and 7th. So they're loaded up for the draft. They've altered their course as a team. Like, their destiny is now different, and they're not just playing for tomorrow. Today is a real outcome. So, yeah, I can't say enough. It's just a whole makeover, and really it's been kind of instant coffee. I won't say it's happened overnight, but it's only turning week 9 now, and the Bills are, like, right in control where they need to be and just playing good football.
Well, and I think what's going to be really interesting here is to see what Bills lines look like going forward, because you run into a situation here with this Bills team in that, you know, you're looking at a lot of signs of regression for them. And I'm curious to see what the market does in terms of those games. I mean, look, they're plus 14 in turnover margin right now. They're minus half a yard per play. So both of those things right there are things that a lot of people are going to look at and say, okay, this probably can't continue. I mean, they're number one in percentage of opponents' drives ending with a turnover at 20.3%, and they have the second best turnover percentage at 3.8%. So they're winning the field position battle. They're making it easier on Tyrod Taylor. You know, the running game has not been all that spectacular, just 3.8 yards per carry for LeSean McCoy this year on 137 attempts, but they're taking care of the football. They're not hurting themselves. And that was one of the things that I've kind of been trying to look at a little bit more here in the NFL, is that the teams that don't hurt themselves are the teams that are just having significant amounts of success here this year. Kansas City, one turnover. Buffalo, three turnovers. Patriots, five turnovers. The Saints, only seven turnovers. Now, you've got the Giants and the Seahawks in there who have both had problems. They each have seven turnovers. But, you know, overall, the teams that don't hurt themselves with bad penalties, the teams that don't hurt themselves with turning the football over, those are the teams that are having success. And maybe the formula is just a little bit more simple, or a little bit simpler, I should say, than a lot of us think.
Well, and I will have to agree, though, they have a chance of being overvalued going forward. People are picking up on this, but that's where they're going to get caught, I fear, too, is just on offense. They've got that mantra, we're just going to pound this run, and what a great leader. I mean, not just is LeSean McCoy the focal point of the offense, he's also pretty much the spokesman of the team. You want to gauge the temperature of the Bills, you better talk to Shady. But that's what they're doing. Like you said, they're taking care of the ball. They're just not letting themselves beat them. And that what they're doing with not a lot of talent on the outside, I like Jordan Matthews, and he's going to develop for them, but you're basically sticking them in a brand new offense. And Zay Jones, there's potential there, obviously, but we're talking about a very green around the gills rookie here, and they're still able to stay in games. Hopefully Charles Clay gets back for him, because that really was, in theory, outside of McCoy, that's their leading receiver in this scheme. So, just getting by on offense, that's the areas I'd look for when they really are up against an actual respectable defense. You know, maybe you're looking at those unders or something, but this is a team, it's just hard not to get on their side with a coach you know they're buying in and a bunch of players that you know they're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, and they've got a short week here. They go up to the Meadowlands, take on the New York Jets. I guess I should say across to the Meadowlands, to take on the New York Jets here on Thursday night. So you got an AFC East battle here. Bills are a 3-point favorite, minus 15, minus 20 out there, depending on the sports book that you're looking at. And, you know, all of a sudden, this becomes a really interesting game. You've got this Jets team that, realistically speaking, probably should have covered against the Falcons here over the weekend. They're 3-5, which 3 wins is more than a lot of people figure that they would get this year. But the Bills have a chance to improve to 6-2, and then kind of sit around with a little bit of extra rest before taking on the Saints at home. So, you know, this is a really good game here on Thursday night, a good barometer for both of these teams. How do you think this one stacks up?
I'd really be wanting to take that Bills in the three. I'd lay the field goal in that one. And what was the last game, 21-12? Granted, different Jets team, different part of the process. But, I think they buckle down on McCown. There's not much else the Jets could do against those corners. Tre'Davious White just playing some great football. And, I'd look at the Bills getting away with that one. And, as you mentioned, they're just heading into some extra time off. Great time to play the Jets, get an extra couple of days, and then really bone up for that Saints game, that's sure to be a classic.
All right, well, we'll look back here at the performance of Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. They lose 41-38, did cover the number against the Seahawks. I played the Seahawks in the Super Contest. I liked it a lot more until we got a lot of people on it with what happened with Texans owner Bob McNair, and the comments that he made that the players obviously did not appreciate. And you know, there was a little bit of uncertainty about how Houston would respond here coming into this game. But they wound up giving a good effort out there in Seattle. The defense didn't really do a whole lot, but the offense certainly did, as Deshaun Watson threw for 402 yards and 4 touchdowns in this game on just 19 completions. He was, however, sacked 5 times, 3 interceptions. So you had a lot of good, you had a little bit of bad here. What were your overall impressions of Watson's performance?
I've been a believer, like, as far as the draft process, but I think the last time we talked about him on the show, I was just advising people, hey, this was Tennessee. This is one game. Things happen in a vacuum. Let's pump the brakes. Well, I'm taking those brakes off. I think his restrictor plate's off. I mean, this guy's full throttle right now. The rookie curve, I don't know where that is. I think he's beyond scheming for him. You can't just put a spy on him. He's going to break pain. He's going to keep his eyes downfield. You can't even distract him with an idiot owner. I just cannot say enough. Like, just in that situation on the road against what is reputable. Now, granted, this is not the same old Legion of Boom, but that situation, as you mentioned, the distractions, I think he's just stepped up. Like I said, he just finds the pressure where it's coming. He can sense it even if he can't see it. And when he evades that pass rush and gets outside the pocket, that's just such a challenge for any middle line. I don't care what position you play. Running with this kid is tough. And, you know, so what if he doesn't have velocity? No, he doesn't have a howitzer, and that was the big knock on him. He's coming from a gimmicky college offense. He just keeps stepping back up. And the kid now, if you think about it, Nick Saban's pressure cooker out front, Dick LeBeau's zone blitz, Pete Carroll's classic Trojan 4-3 that's being copied throughout the league, and now Bill Belichick's scheming 3-4. He's seen all those defenses and scored plenty of points and made big plays against every single one of those crews. That's a murderer's row that would put a lot of rookies to shame. Now, he's surrounded with talent, and I think that's why he's able to get away with this. And I really can't stand it. Oh, well, if we redraft it, of course, it's got to be the Browns. And he'd turn the Browns around. He'd turn the Bears around. He'd turn the 49ers. He would not be the same quarterback with the Browns. I'm sorry. The Bears have no wide receivers. If the same injuries happen with the Bears, you stick Deshaun Watson on to Chicago, yes, they'd have a little more success. But he's not doing this without Will Fuller. He's not doing this without Nuk Hopkins. And really, we talk about Denver backs up against the wall here. That coaching staff in Houston, this was it. If it didn't work out with Watson, game over, and there's a big reset button for the whole crew, including maybe GM Rick Smith. So they had to make this work. And, yeah, credit to their coaching staff. They not only got this kid up to speed, they took some humble pie. They changed up their offense. They made it a little more Clemson-esque, and it's just showing. And I'm going to break my arm, pat myself on the back at him, because in the draft process for Draft Bible, I was one of the only guys kind of banging the table for Watson, ended up losing that debate. But you can rest assured I'm rubbing it in on conference calls now. And that the one takeaway, just to get back to the point, this secondary is still bad in Houston. They're going to continue to have problems without Watt and Merciless. They're just putting that pressure on. Without that, they're going to be exploited. They're going to give up those big plays. And, you know, not to be ignored, Russell Wilson on the other side of this game, he put up plenty of points and moved the ball with ease. And it was Lockett. If it wasn't Lockett, it was Paul Richardson getting open in this secondary. And what's unfortunate is Houston, they've put assets and draft picks and things into this secondary, and it's there's still some suspect players. So I think they're just going to be forced into boat races, whoever they're playing. I mean, just both sides of the ball, you're going to continue, I think, to see just high scores for these Texans games, because Watson's just going to keep on keeping on, man.
All right, well, let's go to the NFC East here. Let's talk a little bit of Dallas Cowboys. They go on the road, beat the Washington Redskins 33-19, a week after blowing out the 49ers, and that, of course, came the week after the bye. So seems like things maybe have settled down a little bit in Dallas here after kind of an inauspicious start to the season. Of course, we still don't know when or if Ezekiel Elliott will have to serve this suspension that continues to get pushed back. Big workhorse game for him, 33 carries, 150, couple scores, 4.5 yards per carry, 4.3 yards per carry overall for Dallas. And it's a good sign for the Cowboys that they were able to win a game relatively comfortably here and not have to get a whole lot out of Dak Prescott. It was just 14-22 for 143 yards. But you're not crazy about the Dallas Cowboys right now.
Well, I'm just seeing a team that's going to have to outscore everybody in every single game. And, yeah, that's all. They've got their offense back together. That Zeke looks great. Still holes on that offense, too. Lyle Collins is not Doug Free, as we've said, and he had a number of bad reps in that last game. They won in spite of him. Just could not block Ryan Kerrigan. He should be thankful Ryan Kerrigan had that groin injury where he had to leave the game at parts, and I think that's what really hampered him. And then their guard situation is atrocious. Draft bust, Jonathan Cooper running with the ones, that just shouldn't be. I mean, Bruce Arians, the Cardinals, gladly got rid of him in that trade, and then Bill Belichick kicks him to the curb after the deal. He resurfaces in Dallas. So you're looking at three really good coaching staffs, in particular the Patriots. Dante Scarnecchia, legendary offensive line coach. If he has that kid in camp and says it ain't there, it ain't there. So I don't know what the Cowboys are thinking with Jonathan Cooper. I think they get exposed against Philly's got to be licking their chops. And on defense, they've got a lot of guys that can't run in that secondary. What they're getting by with right now is a great defensive line. Getting Dave Irving back, DeMarcus Lawrence is just playing at an elite level. It's clear. I mean, he definitely wants a big contract, but there's just a corner problem. And it's not going to get better because of injury unless Chidobe Awuzie is some Janoris Jenkins, and I don't know if we saw that at Colorado. I think this is a flawed team. It's a suspect head coach, beatable secondary, and yes, they're winning with a stud back. They got a mobile, heady quarterback, and that defensive line turns the screws with a lead in their back pocket. I mean, that's all great and well and good, but what happens in the close games, and what happens against elite quarterbacks, and what happens if it's not pouring rain? I think they were getting killed with those Chris Thompson screen passes. They couldn't cover Jordan Reed to save their life. Another fortune for them that Jordan Reed was banged up in this game. I'm waiting until they play Philly. I think Zach Ertz in ideal conditions when you're trying to spy Carson Wentz on a broken pocket. Good luck. I see flaws with this Cowboy team.
Well, the Cowboys, it doesn't really get easy for them here over the next 3 weeks. Kansas City at home at Atlanta, and of course we'll see if the Falcons can have anything turned around by that point. And then that Eagles matchup on Sunday Night Football on November 19th. So that'll be a pretty big one there. And then, of course, the short week to take on the Chargers on Thanksgiving. And, you know, at least that one's at home, and they do play three straight home games here to close out November. But still, you'll have to see what happens with the Cowboys as we go forward. Another team that you want to make mention of here on today's show, and I think this is a really good one to end on, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this is a team where we saw a pretty decent amount of sharp involvement come in on Carolina. Eventually, this number did settle in the 1.5 range, but people liked the Panthers in this spot. Maybe it was a fade of Jameis Winston off the injury. Maybe it was the expectation that Cam Newton would be better. Spoiler alert, he was not. But Tampa Bay only scored 3 points here in this game. So, you know, what are you doing with the Bucs right now? Are you buying? Are you selling? Are you kind of waiting it out? What do you think?
I'm scooping up some stock right now. I looked at this score and the results and I didn't get the chance to watch the game. So Sunday night late, I just popped it in the condensed version. Didn't get the all 22 fancy yet, but I'm looking at just a bad set of circumstances here. And I think the big reason for that Panthers backing those two corners out for the Buccaneers, that was really good. And it did make a difference, but I think everyone's swimming downstream. I'm going to go upstream. Four losses in a row. Dirk Cotter's hot seat. Yes, Jameis Winston in his shoulder. They didn't score any points. I'm telling you, it's a windy day. Tampa's two starting corners also, they hurt themselves so many times with penalties. And what really, I think, part of this re-injury, it's not that it's limiting his passing. It's just that practice time that was not getting in. Limited all week. I think the only full practice he put in was Friday because it's all he could take. It's all they wanted to chance. And it really affected the chemistry with the receivers. His cadence for the whole first half wasn't right. And his delivery, I don't think, got fine-tuned until the end of the third quarter. But even with that, the Bucs were in position late fourth, I think 11, 10 minutes left, whatever it was. Jameis just gets hit from behind by Captain Munnerlyn. It's the tipped pass, gets intercepted. Cam Newton goes on a big drive. They're up another touchdown, and it's just the one that really stinks was the Luke Kuechly interception. He stared him down and just gave that one away. So that is a bad mistake, but I think there's just a lot of injury factors, the chemistry, the cohesion, and then on the other side, Luke Kuechly returning to the lineup, he's a difference maker. It's clear cut. He's not just a coach on the field. this is his defense that they're running. I mean, it's basically the whole show. It's up to him, and him being back, that's a completely different defense. So I look for Winston, what I'm going to be paying when he's back in full practice. They get those cornerbacks back in the lineup. I think you also have those wins that were gusting in that game that may have just – he overshot a lot of passes. I don't think it's, like I said, it's not arm strength. It's just ball placement. One was definitely a wrong route, but I'm convinced Jameis, he regresses back in a positive way. And I think this team, you can kind of buy low on their lowest right now. People see, 20-3, that, well, this team's in the dirt. This coach could get fired. I don't want any part of this. I love going on teams, backs up against the wall. I think that's probably my theme for today, but that's definitely a Tampa Bay team that there's still a ton of talent on this roster, not just offensively, defensively. They'll get their act together to sink or swim at this point, and I believe they'll swim.
Well, injuries have played a big part. I mean, Quan Alexander and Lavonte David were both out earlier on in the year, and those are two significant losses for Tampa Bay. I mean, that's pretty much their entire linebacker corps at that point. And, you know, I mean, those two guys are both very, very good. Quan Alexander is one of the most underrated linebackers in the NFL. But let me ask you this, Joe. The next game for Jameis Winston, which will come against Saints here on Sunday, assuming he's able to go with the Saints a 7-point favorite, this will be game number 40 for Jameis Winston. Right around a 60% completion percentage, 60 touchdowns, about 39 interceptions here. So, you know, kind of that 3-2 ratio a little bit with him. What is Jameis Winston at this point? I mean, he's only 23 years old. There's probably still some more development to be done, maybe with a different head coach, a different offensive coordinator. We could see things take off. We could see him take care of the football a little bit more. But, I mean, is 2.5 seasons enough to give a concrete – report on this guy? I mean, what do you think about him as we go forward here throughout his career?
I think, you know, you've had some situations of injury, but there's not many excuses here. The turnovers have been abundant. He's willing to take chances, and this whole team has kind of acquiesced, I guess you could say, to him. Dirk Cotter's the head coach because Jameis wanted it so. DeSean Jackson is over in the crew because the Jameis wanted it to be. I know Mike Evans and DeSean have a little bit of a relationship, but he's asking for targets. He's asking for this coach. Well, ask. They want some returns. And, yeah, I think at the end of this season, it's a fair question to ask, where are we with at quarterback? Is this the way we want to go forward? But that organization believes, I still believe, just from – I still think leadership-wise – he is there. There's no question. He's all bought in on it. And there are players that still gravitate towards this guy. So I think from that perspective, you're going forward. And my chips would be all in if I was that GM. And you know, you just continue to try and fix that offensive line, I think is where I go for. But still, I have faith in Winston. And, you know, it's been a rough year. There's no doubt in the expectations, I think, which is that's the most difficult part about this. You add DeSean Jackson, you draft O.J. Howard. You were already serviceable last year. It should only be better, and it has been anything but better. But I still do think, yeah, brighter days from this offense and team yet ahead.
What about Jason Lynn? I mean, is he safe here? This is his fourth year, and 2-14, 6-10, 9-7, sort of. You know, his job security is pretty much tied to how Jameis Winston develops here with this football team. You know, he made the decision, like you said, to go with Cotter because that's what Winston wanted. And, you know, I mean, that's one of those things that kind of defines your tenure as a GM, is that franchise quarterback and the head coach that you give him, and to some extent the offensive coordinator as well. So, I mean, is he safe? Do we see a reshuffling of the deck here in Tampa Bay? I mean, look, this is a team that, you know, has a banged up quarterback, still has a really challenging schedule left ahead. They're only 2-5. Doesn't look like the playoffs are going to be a thing. I mean, do you think that we kind of see some, they don't have a bye week either, so that doesn't really help them this season. Do we see a reshuffling of the deck here with, you know, the ace of spades and Jameis Winston still at the top?
Oh yeah. Well, if it all goes wrong this year, yeah, the only one safe is Jameis. That is a fact. And really, Licht is, he's got some questionable decisions in the past. Namely, Roberto Aguayo is probably going to haunt him for life, but I don't know that he's made terrible picks. I mean, Vernon Hargreaves is still an up-and-comer. Noah Spence is on IR right now, but I think they took a chance in a guy that you know could pass rush. So there's something there. I don't hate his last draft class, but I think it's no fault of his own. It's such a results business, and yeah, if they fire that coach, they'll fire the GM. They'll go whole clean slate, and I hate to say reset button again, but that's basically what this would be. They keep Evans, they keep Jameis, one of those linebackers. I think eventually Levante David might have to walk, but yeah, you rebuild that team around Jameis, Mike Evans, and Quan Alexander, and yeah, I don't think Jason Licht is safe, and if anything, you want a scapegoat, he sure looks like an easy one to me.
Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. What's going on over there right now, Joe?
I'm breaking out a conference call right after I get off the line here. Wide receivers for the College Gridiron Showcase. We're getting hot and heavy on those invites. And, yeah, we've got a podcast, I'd say, coming up. I want to say it will likely be Friday, breaking down some of the bigger games of college football this week. So, yeah, that and daily scouting reports. We've got them piped up and loaded up until 2018 for the scouting reports. So you can see a new prospect every day at NFLDraftBible.com.
And you can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett and at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, bud.
All right. Looking forward to it, Adam.
Great stuff there today with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Well, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, sign up using the promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. One more segment left to go here for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is our Week 10 College Football First Look with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Hey, man. Not the best day here. You know, picked up a bug from the kids, and I think at one point last night during the night I was listed as doubtful for the show, but playing through it, and hopefully I make some sense with my thoughts here coming off a couple hours of sleep last night.
Well, a pretty interesting weekend in Week 9. And, of course, we've got a lot of good games coming up here in Week 10. Lots of ranked matchups, lots of games that have division implications, conference implications, college football playoff implications, just tons of stuff going on here this week. And, of course, the return of Tuesday and Wednesday night action, which we'll hit on a little bit here as well. But before we get into our look ahead, let's take a look back. We'll take a look back at Week 9 here. Some injury news, some notes, some stats, some trends, that type of thing. We like to call this our quick hitters segment. Kyle, what's the first point you've got here for this week?
Well, first up, I want to say that Arizona is now third in the nation in yards per play. That's pretty amazing when you think about how much they struggled early in the season. How about Tate? His numbers have been amazing the last few games, video game type numbers. Arizona is a really interesting team to me now. And when I was looking at yards per play, certainly I knew Arizona would be up there pretty high, but third, that's really impressive.
Khalil Tate, 13.4 yards per carry on 69 attempts. It's ridiculous what that kid's doing here. And I got to ask you this. I kind of wonder, I mean, did this kid save Rich Rod's job?
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, he was definitely on the hot seat there. You kind of wonder how Tate didn't get the job sooner. But, you know, good for Rich Rod and Arizona that he got it when he did, because he's definitely doing some special things now. You know, he comes up against some defenses here in the next few weeks that have not been very good at stopping the run. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him keep putting up some pretty big numbers here. So we'll see what happens. The next one on my list, New Mexico. They finished -7 in turnover margin last week against Wyoming. Wyoming had 309 yards in that game and 42 points. You know, this is crazy to me, too, because the Sharps keep steaming New Mexico every single week. I mean, they're catching money like crazy. They did it a couple weeks ago against Fresno State. I think the final score was like 38-0 in that one. And then last week, you know, against Wyoming, 42-3. So New Mexico's kind of been a darling of some Sharp players, and we'll see if that changes now.
Yeah, that will be very interesting to watch. I mean, you go by the 7 in turnover margin, that's going to be a big-time problem for you. But also New Mexico, only 2.9 yards per carry in this game. So, you know, it was kind of interesting to look at the Lobos coming into the year anyway, coming off of an impressive season, a bowl performance. And then Bob Davie, you know, with some of those allegations earlier on in the year about mistreatment of players, we weren't entirely sure what we were going to get out of New Mexico as this season went along. Had a nice win at Tulsa, although we found out Tulsa's not very good. Scored 56 against Air Force. Last 3 weeks, I mean, they played well against Colorado State 2 weeks ago, but shut out at Fresno, shut out at Wyoming. You know, they're laying 4.5 here this week against Utah State, and I think this is a game that, you know, will give us a pretty good barometer, because a lot of money came in against Utah State last week against Boise State. If money comes in New Mexico here again this week, could be a last stand from the sharp bettors out there.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see that one. You know, I don't think Utah State's that good of a team, but I wouldn't want to be laying 4.5 points with New Mexico either. So we'll see what happens with that one. Next on my list, Iowa State beats TCU 14-7. Here's a misleading game. TCU averaged 5.2 yards per play. Iowa State 3.75. The -2 turnover margin is what beat TCU in that one primarily. Still, Iowa State's really a great story this year. You got to give props to Matt Campbell and this coaching staff.
Matt Campbell's doing a phenomenal job there. And I actually wrote up my Northern Illinois Toledo preview, and it kind of makes me wonder if Jason Candle might get looked at for a bigger job here this summer, because the Rockets have over 7 yards per play, comes from that Campbell coaching tree. And with what Campbell's doing, a lot of times there's kind of a subsequent effect with the assistants, especially if they stay around at the previous program or if they're, you know, still on the current staff. Sometimes those guys get a little bit more of a look as well. I will say this. This isn't a game that we're going to talk about. I'm sure we'll talk about it as we go throughout the week here with some of our other handicappers. But it is going to be very, very hard for me to not have a West Virginia ticket here this week, despite how they shot themselves in the foot so many times there in that game against Oklahoma State. But for Iowa State, it's a great story. I just wonder, you know, how long they can keep this up.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if I like West Virginia in that game or not. I haven't looked at it very much yet. But, you know, West Virginia's had a lot of problems on defense. Iowa State clearly the better defense there. West Virginia the more dynamic offense. And, you know, West Virginia with a really good home field advantage. So an interesting game. We'll see what Iowa State's made of in that one. Certainly they've been a really big surprise here so far this year. And a lot of credit goes to the coaching staff
there. Let me ask you something real quickly here before we move on from that point. So Iowa State's 14th in the country right now. Where are they in your power ratings? How far up are they in those?
I haven't updated all my power ratings so far for this week. So it's kind of hard for me to say what I think last week Iowa State was somewhere in the 20s. They're not 14th. I know that. I haven't updated this week. So I'm not sure. They'll move up, but they won't be 14th.
Okay, I was just curious because I have them like in the upper 30s in my, well, in the lower 30s of mine. They're like 30, 31 range. And yeah, I'm just wondering, maybe I'm too skeptical of this team. So I was kind of curious to get your thoughts and then sort of gauge against where you had them.
I had Iowa State 29th last week. So I assume they'll move up a few spots. They'll probably be 24th or something like that. So I think Iowa State's not the 14th best team in the country, but maybe a little bit better than you think they are.
All right, fair enough. What's the next point you've got for the quick hitters?
A couple of injuries here. Ball State, I mean, Ball State's had a terrible season, first of all. Talking about power ratings, teams that are just brutal. I mean, move way down in the power ratings throughout the course of the season. Ball State's down their fourth-string quarterback now after their third-string guy broke his ankle last game. So fourth-string quarterback going to start this next game. Ball State can outscore. Bad defense. You know, it's hard to make a number big enough on Ball State right now, but this is a team that's really just been torn apart by injuries, and they have nothing right now.
No, they really don't. And I finally made the right adjustment. I actually dropped them 9 points in my power ratings this week because I was just – it was clear that I had underestimated the Neal and the Gilbert injuries for them. Then you take away yet another quarterback. My number is still actually short this week against Eastern Michigan. I've got it 22. Market's out there at 24 most places, but at least I'm finally in the ballpark here. And by dropping them 9 points, they rank 129th in my power ratings. So, yeah, this is a team where injuries have just completely crippled them.
Yeah, I was about to ask where they are in your power ratings. I assume, what are they, second worst of UTEP or something?
Yeah, UTEP. Poor UTEP.
Yeah, I figured we could count on the Miners being at the bottom. So, yeah, Ball State is just terrible. The next one I wanted to talk about was UMass. Andrew Ford, their quarterback, was taken off on a stretcher last game. You know, he'd been playing really well for UMass. They'd been putting up a decent amount of points. Their offense wasn't near as good after he went out last game. I don't really have a good update on him as far as what his status is going forward, but obviously when they take you off on a stretcher and check for neck injuries, you'd think that they would be pretty cautious with him moving forward. You know, he's listed as questionable right now against Mississippi State this weekend. You'd have to say it'd be a surprise if he plays.
Yeah, it certainly would. I mean, Ford is a guy, 64% completion percentage, 13-3 touchdown interception ratio. And he is a guy that has taken a beating here over the last 3 years for UMass, but he's one of those guys that you generally don't think too much about it when you talk about UMass or maybe a team like New Mexico State with Tyler Rogers. But as far as the drop-off from starter to the backup, this is one of the bigger ones in the country for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this would be a really significant drop-off, and I think that there's going to be a decent amount of people to want to grab the points with UMass there in what would be a spot that you might assume Mississippi State would look over them. But if Ford's not playing, I wouldn't be interested in doing that. I had one more note here. Coastal Carolina crushed by Texas State last week. That was the strangest game when I was looking at box scores and you know, trying to look for misleading games and things like that. Texas State's been really bad throughout the season. I really don't know what happened in that game. You know, Coastal had been at least somewhat competitive in their last few games, and here they just get blown out by Texas State. You look at that game, Texas State went 27-7. Coastal doesn't score an offensive touchdown all game. And as far as I can tell, it looks like Coastal didn't pass the 50-yard line on offense at any point. So they never got into Texas State territory. Just a really terrible showing from them.
It's been a really weird year for Coastal. I mean, they've been down their starting quarterback and their backup a couple times. Their head coach took a medical leave of absence before the season, their first year transitioning over to FBS. So, I mean, but then they've had some of these games where they've played really well and have actually pulled off, you know, some minor upsets or won as a small favorite. So, to me, they're just a team I don't touch right now. They're getting 24.5 against Arkansas this week, but I'm not particularly interested in that. One other game or one other injury I want to mention here, Peyton Ramsey for Indiana went down with a knee injury. It did not look good, helmet to knee. Richard Lago now going to be the guy that goes back under center for Indiana, or back behind center, I guess I should say. And this is a guy who started the year for them, played pretty well in that game against Ohio State, throwing the ball 65 times, completed 40 of them. Since then, not a whole lot to write home about, and I was kind of surprised that, to me, it doesn't really look like there was an adjustment in the market for Indiana here, despite what I see to be a pretty significant downgrade at quarterback.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there should be a huge downgrade. I think that, you know, Lego has had his moments. The problem with him is that he doesn't take care of the ball well. And, you know, he can rack up a bunch of yards, but he throws the pick sixes too often, things like that. Ramsey was more of a running threat, and he seemed to take care of the ball better. I think Legault has a decent upside, but he hasn't proven it very consistently. Like you said, he certainly looked good against Ohio State in that first game, but we'll see if he can do it on a consistent basis.
All right, so we'll get into some of these game breaks here, and we'll start with Tuesday night. We got a couple of Maction games to mention here. No line on the Miami of Ohio and Ohio game, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. And I know you said you really haven't updated your power ratings yet, so I don't know if you can answer this question, but I'm sort of curious, you know, Gus Ragland is expected to play in this game, which obviously he's a significant adjustment to the line, probably looking at a 4.5, 5-point line adjustment if he's able to go. So do you have numbers in front of you here in terms of what this number would be with him and without him?
Yeah, let me pull it up here real quick. So this is a game that I haven't done much looking at, obviously. But I think that with him playing, you said, what is he listed as right now?
I think he's listed mostly as probable. I haven't seen anything that would indicate that he's not going to play, and you get a little bit of extra prep time, of course, with this Tuesday night game. But I've seen expected to play. I've seen questionable. I've kind of seen it all over the map here.
Okay, so I think if Raglan plays, I think Ohio is still going to be a decent favorite in this game. You know, Ohio may be -6.5, something like that. If Raglan does not play, Ohio is going to be a pretty significant favorite. I'll say -10.5, something like that.
All right. I had it -4 with Raglan and -9 without him. And part of that is because I think I haven't really fully adjusted to Ohio here. And the fact that all of the sudden, this is a really, really potent Bobcat offense. But Ohio's 0.8 points per game here so far this year. They're 10th in scoring average. They scored more than 40 points just once in a game last season. So this is an offense that all of a sudden is doing some significant work. The offensive line has played very well, only 13 sacks allowed in 8 games. You know, they've got over 6 yards per play. Ohio, to me, is a team that I just haven't adjusted properly with Rourke at the helm. 6.3 yards per carry, 10-3 touchdown interception ratio. Ohio looks like they're a very legit team at this point.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I mean, Ohio's defense is solid. I mean, they're 28th in yards per play allowed. Miami's 55th. You know, certainly Ohio has to be favored by a decent amount in this game, no matter what. You know, I think Solich is a really underrated coach. You know, he's done a really good job there at Ohio and continues to do so this year.
What's really interesting about Ohio is that he's had both of his coordinators for 13 years in a row. And you talk about all the college football turnover here, and that level of continuity is something that makes Ohio a really solid, underrated team because they just win 8 or 9 games almost every year. And looks like they're on pace to do that here this year and possibly win the MAC for the first time in about 40 years. So, or 50 years, I should say. So we'll see if that comes to fruition for them. We do have a line on the Bowling Green-Kent State game, and this is a game that people will bet because it's a Tuesday night. And other than that, you know, they really wouldn't pay attention to it. But Bowling Green is a road favorite at Kent State here, favored by 1.5. My numbers actually have Kent State a slight favorite here of 2. I guess I understand why Bowling Green is a road favorite, but it's hard to touch either one of these two teams.
Oh, this is a brutal game. Yeah, the only reason people are going to be interested in this game is because they're betting on it. Nothing exciting about this game at all. I really don't have interest in this game. I think my numbers will make it about exactly a pick-em. Kent State's offense is terrible. They're second worst in yards per play so far this year. I think you can probably guess who's worst. UTEP, the Miners again. Bowling Green has 19 turnovers this year. Bowling Green last year and this year has had real problems taking care of the football. They're a team that moves the ball a decent amount but isn't very efficient on offense because they turn it over in the red zone consistently. So neither of these teams I'm interested in backing. Neither defense has been very good. Kent State's defense has been a little bit disappointing compared to last year. And, you know, Kent State, they've got nothing on offense. I think it makes a little bit of sense for Bowling Green to be favored here. But at the same time, do you really want to take Bowling Green as a road favorite? I don't.
No, I don't either. And part of that for Kent State, too, is that their offense has just been so bad that it's going to carry over to the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, hey, like we said, I mean, it's an ESPNU game. It's Maction. Most people will be more interested in Miami and Ohio, and as well they should be. But still, you know, if you do wager on this game, I've got a preview up over at bangthebook.com. Just be smart about your money in these Maction games because, you know, we are talking about some teams that are kind of inherently high variance. You know, a lot of times in the MAC, everybody kind of beats everybody unless you've got that really, really remarkable team like a Western Michigan last year. Who Western Michigan plays on Wednesday night here in Kalamazoo. They take on Central Michigan in one of those directional rivalries. This number opened 7. It's come down to 6.5 here. And this was a number I was really interested in seeing because for Western Michigan, he is this season with Franklin and Bogan drawing the majority of that. But still, when they've needed to, they've gotten the questions. You kind of know that's going to be the case.
You know, I think this number might be a little bit too short. My lean would be Western Michigan in this game. You got a passing team in Central Michigan, a running team in Western Michigan. You know, I'm not convinced that Central Michigan is going to be able to stop the run here. I think Western Michigan can be fairly one-dimensional and get away with it in this game. You know, Western Michigan's pass defense isn't anything tremendous, but they're okay. You know, I just think Central Michigan – is one of those teams that they caught a few people off guard there earlier this season, probably a little bit better than they were supposed to be. I still think there's quite a bit more talent at Western Michigan than there is at Central Michigan. So my opinion would be that this minus 6.5 is a little bit short. I am surprised that the line has dropped here from minus 7 down to 6.5.
Yeah, I had this one at 8.5. I think I made a 2-point adjustment to Wasink being out, and who knows? I mean, it could wind up being more than that. We'll see how Reese Goddard is in this game. He only had 3 pass attempts last week, and of course, like I said, being a freshman, those were the only 3 pass attempts he's had here far. So I think that there's a little bit of an unknown factor here to this one, and maybe that's the numbers grab is just sort of wondering, okay, if Central Michigan floods the box and forces Western Michigan to beat them through the air, if they can do that, then, you know, maybe this is a game that, that does wind up being a fairly tight, really low-scoring type of affair. On the other hand, for Central Michigan here, just a very high-variance team offensively. Shane Morris has put up some huge numbers in some games, has put up some bad numbers in others. Of course, he's a Michigan transfer. So, I don't know. This one feels like a high-variance game to me. In my preview, I had a small lean to Central Michigan to go against my power ratings at 8.5 just because, like I said, I don't know what you get from Western Michigan through the air. I know what you get in a ground game, but, you know, how effective can it be if Central Michigan's got 10 guys in the box every play? So, I don't know. I'll be curious to see how this one plays out. And again, with a standalone game on a Wednesday night, we're going to see a lot of investment in it.
Yeah, I agree on the a lot of variance in this game. It's not one that I'll end up betting. My numbers are certainly going to make it a lean to Western Michigan, but I'm going to pass on this game unless they put the number too high and I play the under.
All right, we'll touch on the Thursday and Friday games with other guests here as we go throughout the week, but let's go ahead and go to Saturday, and let's start with a big one here between Clemson and North Carolina State, game 325-326 on the rotation order. And right now it looks like Clemson, little bit of the preferred side here. This one opened 7 flat with minus 110 on both sides at Bookmaker. Lots of 7s with extra juice. A few 7.5s have popped out there in the marketplace as well. Clemson getting a little bit of the initial investment here for this one.
I'm not surprised that Clemson's getting a little bit of investment here early on. My number is going to make this a little bit bigger than this for sure. NC State was a little disappointing to me last week. I thought that NC State would be a team that could match up pretty well against Notre Dame, and that NC State's defensive front is their strength. Notre Dame runs the ball all the time. NC State didn't do as well as I thought they would in that game. And Clemson, you know, I feel like this is one of those spots where they're going to be highly motivated. And when you get a Dabo Swinney team that's well prepared for a game, they've played extremely well in big games. So my lean here would be Clemson. I think that Clemson will be very good in the trenches, especially on the defensive end. I think they'll be in the backfield quite a bit here. NC State's offensive line, not up to the task, I don't think. Having said that, the question is how much is Clemson going to score here? You know, Clemson's offense has not been extremely consistent throughout the year. Part of that because of injury issues, but I think the upside for Clemson is so much higher than it is for NC State. And like I said, I don't think there's any reason to expect anything other than a very motivated Clemson team here.
I think that this one's a little bit of a challenging handicap because I really like Warren. I really like the job that he's done. And the best part about NC State is that they don't hurt themselves. And in that last game, they only threw one interception, Ryan wasn't particularly efficient, just 17 of 37. Maybe that's a commentary on Notre Dame. Maybe it's a commentary on Notre Dame being a better team than we originally thought, because that was a game where the number did move down a little bit on NC State. It opened 8.5, wound up going down to about 7, and Notre Dame was pretty much in control of that game throughout. So maybe Notre Dame is just better than we thought, but better than we expected. Maybe that game last week isn't much of a commentary on NC State. Now, of course, for Clemson here, this coming into the season looked like a really horrible spot. You're coming off the option game against Georgia Tech. You go on the road to take on NC State. And then you've got this huge matchup against Florida State on deck. Well, Florida State looks a lot different right now than they looked coming into the season. So in this particular spot here where, you know, you look at this game and you look at Clemson, would have been a 6.5-point favorite coming into the year. Now they're a 7.5-point favorite. You take away what looks like a bad look-ahead spot with Florida State, and you get a little bit truer of a line here. So the fact that this number hasn't moved from the summer, it makes me wonder what the perception is of Clemson. Defensively, they're very good on the defensive line, exceptional. But Kelly Bryant, while he showed signs early on in the year, since he's been banged up, this offense really hasn't done a whole lot. 28 against Wake, 24 against Syracuse, 24 against Georgia Tech. Like you said, that's the question, is how many can Clemson score here when they're asked to cover 7, 7.5 on the road against a pretty efficient, pretty stout defensive team?
Yeah, I think the under would be a lean in this game. It would be interesting to see what kind of total they put on this game. But, you know, Clemson's defense has a big edge, like we said, but the offense is the question mark. You know, I like Dave Doran, certainly, but Clemson has a small coaching advantage, at least, with Dabo Swinney. And, you know, this is just a Clemson team that has more talent than North Carolina State does. NC State has a really good defensive line, but Clemson's defensive line is even better. It's hard to find a spot on the field where NC State is significantly better than Clemson. And there's a decent amount where you can find Clemson is definitely better than NC State. You know, I lean Clemson very slightly here, but I will either be taking the under if the number's high enough or passing on this game.
I mean, I've got this one 7.5, so I'm right there on the number. But one thing I will point out here about NC State is last week was really bad for them in a lot of different ways. For one thing, you know, they didn't play particularly well against Notre Dame, lost by 3 touchdowns. Louisville didn't look good, and Florida State looked absolutely atrocious. So the two signature wins that NC State has this season, they're getting cheaper in value as we go throughout the year here. And at that point, you do kind of question, okay, you know, how good is this NC State team? What is the ceiling for this team? And that's one of the key things you have to do as you go throughout the season is continue to reevaluate the body of work so far. And right now, like I said, those wins over Florida State and Louisville don't look as good as they did at the time.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's interesting is to see what happened with the line because of things like that. You know, perception's going to change based on, you know, those were really good wins. Maybe they weren't great wins. So, you know, Clemson has had some good wins for sure. NC State, we're not sure about that. So I think they still have some to prove.
All right, let's go to Bedlam here. Game 391, 392, enormous game in the Big 12 between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. A little bit of Oklahoma investment here overnight and in the morning hours to drop this number down to 3 with some reduced juice, those that want to play Oklahoma State. 3-15, there is a 3-10 out there at Pinnacle. And, you know, I mean, obviously this game just means so much, not just for these two teams, but also for the Big 12 Conference. Because with TCU losing that game last week to Iowa State, you know, now all of a sudden you look at the Big 12 and you say, okay, it's going to be really, really difficult for this conference to put anybody in the college football playoff. Iowa State tied atop the conference at 4-1, but they've already lost 2 games. Oklahoma's got a loss. Oklahoma State has a loss. So, you know, this is a game where these two teams, I think, really need to stand out to try and impress, you know, the college football playoff committee and the college football playoff rankings.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that Oklahoma is the team that would have the best chance, obviously, with that win in Columbus. But this is a tricky game for them, and they don't really have an easy schedule in general. Oklahoma's played a tougher schedule than Oklahoma State has so far this year. First of all, I think this number is right on. I think -3 is a good number here. You know, based on the matchup, you know, I have looked at this game a decent amount already. I kind of like Oklahoma State, you know, not from thinking I have a great value in the number, but Oklahoma's weakness here on defense has been the pass defense. You know, Ohio State at that point in the season was not able to expose their weakness. You know, obviously Ohio State's pass offense has played better since then, but at that point Ohio State's pass offense was just not very good. We know Oklahoma State's passing offense is really good. So I think Oklahoma State can exploit those weaknesses. The other thing I would say is that as much as I've been worried about Oklahoma State's defense throughout the course of the season, they've been a lot better than Oklahoma. Oklahoma State's 21st in yards per play allowed so far this year. I think Oklahoma's somewhere down around 50. So, you know, this is a spot where Oklahoma State, their defense has been better than I thought it would be. They're actually 19th in yards per play allowed. So Oklahoma State's been pretty good defensively. I still think they're going to give up quite a few yards and points in this game. And obviously, it's going to be a really high posted total. you know, they have a good home field advantage there as well. So we got to take that into account, and it's going to be a great environment for football. At -3, my lean is OK State.
I've got this number 3.5, and I was kind of surprised to see a little bit of initial movement on Oklahoma, because I think you can get 3.5 later on in the week, because I think perception is higher on the Cowboys. And I think, you know, you just talked about it a little bit there too. Statistically speaking, this game does favor Oklahoma State. So I think as limits increase later in the week, I think we probably do see 3.5 pop again. So if you like Oklahoma State, I would take it now. If you'd like Oklahoma, I think I'd probably wait on it a little bit. But, you know, this is one of those spots where Oklahoma State's lost 12 of the last 14 rivalry games against Oklahoma. So they're 2-12 in the last 14 Bedlam matchups. This is probably the best shot that they've had to win that game in quite some time, with Mason Rudolph, with Justice Hill in this running game, with a much improved defense, you know, with an Oklahoma team that's got a first-year head coach in Lincoln Riley, who's obviously done a good job, and he's done a good job with the offense. But, you know, you can kind of see defensively here where the Sooners do have some problems, and they have given up some points to some offenses that just aren't particularly great. So I think if you're Oklahoma State here, you know, you're feeling like, hey, boys, this is the best chance we've got here to, you know, maybe try to string something together in this rivalry. And I think that means a lot to this Oklahoma State team. So I was surprised to see the initial move. I think at, you know, at 3 -15, it's almost right on my number. But if I had to play something in this game, and for those that are maybe in contests or something like that, it would be Oklahoma State or nothing for me here.
Yeah, me as well. I agree with your point as well that, you know, Oklahoma State hasn't had very many chances to beat Oklahoma. And this is a shot for them. I feel like, you know, Gundy is good at motivating his team. I think they'll be well prepared for this game, and it's going to be a really good environment for football. I think at -3, I do like Oklahoma State some.
All right, we got a huge game here in the Big Ten. Noon kickoff in East Lansing, game 4:15, 4:16 between Penn State and Michigan State. Penn State's a 7.5-point road favorite here in this one. This number opened 9. It has since come down, and I actually have this number a little bit higher. I've got it 11.5. So, you know, I'm not necessarily surprised by the move, but it does go against my numbers. Maybe I just didn't adjust Penn State enough. But, man, this is a horrible spot for Penn State.
Yeah, I'm glad. I was going to ask you what your line was. I did update my power rankings for power ratings for both of these teams, and I have 10.5. So, you know, I knew the line would move down based on, you know, a situational spot grab. It's going to be hard for me to take Penn State. I don't think I can take Penn State. I guess the question is where does this line go? I see, you know, it's about down to 7. I mean, you get 7.5 and extra juice on Michigan State at Chris. If this line gets down to 7 or below, it's certainly at least a little bit tempting to take Penn State. Penn State's certainly the better team. There's no doubt about that. Penn State was badly outgained last week against Ohio State. Penn State's special teams almost won in the game there. Their offensive line was really dominated in the second half by Ohio State. I don't think Michigan State has a defensive line that Ohio State does, but Michigan State has a good defensive line. So we'll see how Penn State's offensive front holds up in this one. You know, Penn State's a really good team. Definitely have to still be in the top 4 or 5 in your power ratings. Michigan State, I think they're a good team. I think they're not in the same level as certainly not in the same level as Penn State. But like you said, a brutal, brutal spot for Penn State. This is going to tell us a lot about James Franklin and how good he is at trying to get his team ready in a really difficult spot.
There's something I wanted to make sure that I made a note of here on the show today, and that was, you know, the camera panned in on James Franklin quite a bit there in that game, and obviously it had plenty of reason to in the fourth quarter as Ohio State was coming back. But there were a few things that I really noticed about James Franklin, and I had heard him a couple of months ago over the summer on, I think it was XM College Sports or something like that, and I was very, very impressed listening to him. He gave a lot of credit to Joe Moorhead, who, of course, deserves a lot of credit, but very eloquent, spoke, you know, in great terms about the program, and there were a few defining moments in this game against Ohio State. Anytime he had a player that was injured, came out and checked on him, and I give him a lot of credit for that. You know, maybe it slows down the game, or maybe people don't want to see the head coach have that much of an emotional attachment, whatever. I thought it was really nice to see. But there was a play early on in the game. Penn State's in complete control. Ohio State is scrambling in a big way, and I think it was a late hit call on a kick return or punt return, something like that. Number 11 was the guy that did it. And he came over to the sideline, and a lot of times coaches just berate the hell out of a kid. They will embarrass him in front of everybody on that sideline. James Franklin sat him down on the bench behind all the players, behind all the coaches, said what he needed to say, and then got up and walked away. And he did it man-to-man. And I thought that was extremely impressive. So I don't worry as much about Penn State in this spot. I think James Franklin can look at this team and say, hey, guys, remember when we beat Ohio State last year and they still made it in the college football playoff? Well, there's still time for us. If we get some help, if we get, you know, if Michigan knocks off Ohio State in the last regular season game, we get that crack at Wisconsin, we can put ourselves right there in the college football playoff. So I think he's got that recent motivating factor, and I think he's also the kind of guy that understands the pulse of this program. Also, like you said, they're just a better team. Now, the flip side of this coin is Brian Lewerke for Michigan State has quietly put up some extremely good numbers, 61.4% completion percentage, 14-4 touchdown interception ratio, 4.6 yards per carry, is the second leading rusher for Michigan State. Now, JT Barrett had a phenomenal fourth quarter. It was the best I've ever seen JT Barrett play. But there are some similarities between Lewerke and Barrett had a lot of success against Penn State. Now, obviously, Michigan State doesn't have the same level of athletes on the outside that Ohio State has, probably doesn't have the same level of offensive line either. With Penn State having to cover 7.5 here against a team that has some similarities to the team that just beat them, I could see why there's a little bit of worry about the Nittany Lions side here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game that's a fascinating handicap. You know, we like games like this where there's a lot of different moving parts, and you try to figure out which way to think because, I mean, you could make a good case for either team here. I mean, it'd be easy to say Penn State's in a really bad spot. You're getting more than a touchdown. Take Michigan State. On the other hand, it'd be really easy to say this is an overreaction to the spot. Penn State's just that much better of a team. Barrett played amazing in that fourth quarter. I mean, he played well all game, played amazing in that fourth quarter against Penn State. Lewerke's not as good as Barrett, but he can do some of the same things. I've been impressed by his mobility. I think he's a very good runner. You know, he's very shifty, he follows his blockers well. So I think he could do some damage there in the run game. I don't know how much he'll do in the passing game. You know, Michigan State doesn't have that many good wide receivers. They certainly I wouldn't say Ohio State has great wide receivers either, but Michigan State's are worse. You know, Penn State, to me, is still a really, really talented team. And like we both said, you know, they have a big talent edge in this game. If this game gets down to 7, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because – I do think that, wouldn't you think that if it gets down to 7, there's going to be some involvement on Penn State?
I think there has to be. I mean, I think the move here early in the week, like we talked about, is largely related to the spot. And I think the power ratings guys that have it higher, like you and I do, expected that movement because of the spot. So I do think if this gets to 7, or if it miraculously somehow gets to 6.5, I think you definitely see some sharp involvement there from the numbers guys.
Yeah, I probably won't touch this game, but if it gets below 7, you have to take a second look because Penn State's still a really good team.
One more thing here while we're talking about the Big Ten, I guess I'll throw out a mea culpa because when Michigan and Florida played in week one, I talked up Jim McElwain quite a bit, especially relative to Jim Harbaugh. And obviously that one didn't age particularly well with Jim McElwain now fired from Florida. So I'll throw a little bit of a mea culpa there on that one. I still think Jim McElwain's a good coach. I think he was in a bad situation with expectations that are way too high at Florida. I'll be curious to see where he lands now. But, hey, obviously Harbaugh outlasted him, although to be fair, Harbaugh really hasn't done a whole lot with Michigan. So I stand by what I said about Harbaugh not being that great of a coach, but obviously with McElwain out of the picture, that hot take of mine didn't age particularly well. All right, let's get into the pick six segment here. 6 games, rapid fire fashion, and we'll kick the extra point with Kyle's exclusive free pick. Let's go to Thursday night here, the game that kind of started it all when it comes to hashtag Maction. Northern Illinois catching 9 on the road against Toledo.
Yeah, this I remember that game very well. You know, to me, this number is really good. I'll take Northern Illinois plus the points because I think their defense can do enough. Toledo is certainly the better team here. I won't bet this game as far as the side. The total, you know, Northern Illinois' defense has been pretty good this year. Their offense not that efficient. I mean, this total is certainly going to be in the 60s. I don't think I can take the over, but I'll lean toward Northern Illinois in a game that might be a little bit lower scoring than those normal MACtion games.
I'm going to go the other way here. I'm going to take Toledo. Northern Illinois this year, they've played well defensively, but they've played the likes of Boston College, Nebraska, San Diego State. They haven't played anybody that can throw a forward pass with any level of efficiency. Toledo can do that. So even though my number is right on here, I think my number is actually 9 on this game. You know, I still think Toledo would be my preferred side if I had to make a play. And with a 6 o'clock game on a Thursday night, pretty decent chance that I'll fall into that trap. How about we go to Friday here? Game 317-318. Marshall takes on Florida Atlantic. The Owls are predominantly a 9.5-point favorite in the market, but there are a couple tens as well.
Yeah, Marshall was in a really bad spot there last week against FIU. FIU had a bye week. Marshall was in that letdown spot. You know, NTSU is a team that has been a rival of Marshall lately, and then they could also be looking ahead to this game. So, you know, I was surprised Marshall lost. I wasn't surprised they didn't cover the spread. You know, to me, Florida Atlantic's really been playing some good football here of late. I hate to go against them. I guess I'll lean Florida Atlantic in this one. I think Marshall's still a good team. Marshall's a good defense, but their defense hasn't really played that many good offenses, and Florida Atlantic has really been rolling on offense of late. So at under 10, I'll lean to Florida Atlantic.
My number on this game is 7, and I'll write up the preview here later on today for bangthebook.com, and I honestly don't know what way I'm going to go with this game because I wanted to fade Marshall. I wanted to fade the stats that their defense has because they put them up against some really bad teams. Looks like I missed the boat because last week was the spot to fade Marshall. Now, this week, I'm not really sure. I'd probably still lean Florida Atlantic just to go against that Marshall defense. Wouldn't be a particularly strong play for me. Let's go to Saturday here. Game 335-336, Ohio State. 16-point favorites. There are some 16.5s out there as well. On the road against Iowa in what is not a good spot at all for Ohio State with Michigan State at home on deck.
I think this number is really good. I won't bet this game. I know I won't bet this game side or total. Very slight lean to Iowa. You might be able to catch 17. It looks like it was 17 at the open. It'll probably get to 17 again. So if you like Iowa, you can probably get a 17. Just because of the spot for Ohio State. Ohio State has a lot more talent than does Iowa. But, you know, like you said, off that huge win and then Michigan State next week, it's a difficult spot for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, my number's right on 16. I know the Five Dimes look-ahead line for this game last week was 21, and a listener reached out about that, and I told him to grab it because I had the number at 16, and I didn't make an adjustment to either team off of last week. I had the Ohio State-Penn State number almost right where it was, so I didn't adjust the Buckeyes at all. So 16's right on my number, but again, from a spot standpoint, it's got to be a look at Iowa here in this one. All right, game 341-342, Virginia Tech, 2.5-point road favorite against Miami, Florida.
This is a hard game. You know, Miami looked really bad in that game against North Carolina last week. I had the under in that one and cashed. You know, Miami's offense really looked bad in that game. I know North Carolina's defense was playing decent of late. North Carolina's offense has been the problem. But, you know, Virginia Tech has a really good defense. Fuente is doing a good job with this team. I'm going to take a really slight lean to Miami just because I still think their defense is extremely good as well. I think we'll probably be able to catch a 3 with Miami here based on the initial line move. So I like Miami just a little bit, but this is a tough one.
This is a really tough one. Malik Rozier didn't practice on Sunday, had a shoulder injury on Saturday in a game where Miami barely escaped against North Carolina, who was playing a kid at quarterback that had never played at the collegiate level before. So, you know, I mean, that's not really a great thing for Miami, who's also won a lot of close games here lately. I adjusted Virginia Tech up quite a bit in my power ratings because it's time for me to start respecting what they've done. And I still have Miami as a 1-point favorite. So my lean would be to Miami. But again, I mean, I know a lot of people are very, very skeptical of the Hurricanes. So I do think that this number goes up. I think if you like Miami, it's certainly in your best interest to wait around a little bit here. All right, let's throw some shitty games at you because I haven't done that the last couple of weeks and it feels like a good time to do that. Game 369-370, Cincinnati on the road against Tulane. Tulane's a 5.5-point favorite here, down from 6.5, so a very interesting line move.
Nice. I'll take Tulane here. I do kind of like this one. Tulane's played a lot better at home. Cincinnati still has a lot to prove. You know, I think Fickell will do a good job there, but You know, he didn't get put in a very good situation at Cincinnati. Cincinnati's not used to defending the type of offense that Tulane runs. I'll take Tulane and minus 5.5.
Yeah, this is one of those games where the numbers started moving around, and I'm kind of scratching my head. Like, I don't get it. I mean, I have this number Tulane minus 12, and I haven't been a believer in Cincinnati, and I've actually adjusted Tulane down over the last few weeks because, you know, they had the backdoor cover against South Florida, which is what it is. Did not play well the previous week against FIU. Did not play well last week against Memphis in a blowout. I've been adjusting Tulane down a little bit, and I still have this number nowhere near where it's at in the market. So maybe Cincinnati suddenly got better. I don't know, but I'm not really buying it here in this spot. I would definitely look to take Tulane as well. Here's a line that I'm not entirely sure I get, but I haven't been able to rate either one of these teams throughout the year. Game 383, 384, North Texas catching 3.5 against Louisiana Tech. I've had no clue on Louisiana Tech games all year.
Yeah, this is a really hard one. Louisiana Tech's not been near as good as I thought they would be this year. Clearly a downgrade at quarterback from last year to this year. I think they have a good coaching staff. I like what North Texas is doing. I'm going to take La Tech in this game. Minus 3.5 seems pretty short to me. I know my power ratings number will be bigger than that. I like Mason Fine, North Texas's quarterback. North Texas's defense is bad, though. I mean, Louisiana Tech's not a very good defense either. But, you know, minus 3.5 at home, I'll take Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, my number is 7, but I've been off multiple points on every Louisiana Tech game over, like, the last 6 weeks. So I just don't know what the hell I'm doing with them. And they lost a ton coming into this year. They've basically revamped the entire offense. And, I mean, I don't know what to do with that game, so I'll stay off of it. But for the purposes of this segment, I guess I'll take Louisiana Tech because my numbers do tell me to take that, even though I don't trust them at all. All right, let's kick the extra point here. What is the exclusive free pick you've got for show listeners?
Well, first of all, I just thought that last week's play was Washington. And if I'd been feeling a little better, I probably would have bashed Jim Mora Jr. a little bit earlier in the show. But I did just want to mention that, you know, UCLA – was a good fade there last week. I hope everybody took that one. It ended up being a premium play for me. You know, UCLA, a team that's just a mess. You know, they have way too much talent to be doing that. So just a quick knock on him before I give this free pick this week. But the play for this week, I'll take Colorado State minus 2.5. You know, it's partially what I said earlier in the show. First of all, I think Colorado State is better than what they played here the last couple weeks. That offense is really good. And I think they can put up points on just about anybody. Wyoming first in the nation in turnover margin. I think that's going to regress. You know, that's going to come back to the mean. Colorado State off a disappointing performance. I see this as a good bounce back spot. So I'm going to take Colorado State minus 2.5.
I absolutely love this play. I've got this game much, much higher in my power ratings. And you look at the last 3 weeks for Colorado State. Play the Nevada Air Raid, the New Mexico option, and the Air Force option. Now they get a more traditional pro-style offense to face, something that's easier to game plan for because you see it a lot more often. I think Colorado State's a great, great look this week. That's one that I'll be on as well, and I hope our listeners can get it here under 2.5, or under 3, I should say. Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. What else is going on over at the website right now?
Well, 16-5 in my last 21 college football plays. Lower the price again for the rest of the season, $275 for all college football totals the rest of the season, $375 for all college football plays. Message me, Kyle at huntersportspicks.com or at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter for that. Also sign up for that free pick newsletter there at huntersportspicks.com. Split the free picks this past weekend, 58 and 26 in my last 84 free picks.
And you can follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. Kyle Hunter, hope you feel better, man. And we'll talk to you again next week. And I want to work in some college basketball next week as well. So be prepared for that.
I appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Good first show of the week here with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible and also Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll do a full hour with Sports Cheetah, our Hunting for Winners segment with him. Plenty of college football to discuss, obviously, and we'll see if we talk a little bit of World Series, maybe some NBA, maybe some college hoops as well, as I said, with that starting up here a week from Friday. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.